Good evening, everyone. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we have with us our co-host, as always, Professor A.J. Lowe.
Whoop, whoop.
And tonight we are excited to have a guest who is a personal favorite of mine. I have to give a disclaimer that she is my sister. So, yes, nobody needs to call in and ask about the last name. But we are joined from the East Coast with Brandy M. Johnson, who is a doula. And she is going to talk to us about protesting the healthcare system, black women dying in childbirth. Good evening, Brandy.
Hello, good evening, Ebony. Good evening, Professor
Long. Hello.
Thanks so much for joining us. I want to, just in case folks are wondering, start us out with what is a doula, and then I'll get into how we got into you coming on the show and talking about this topic.
Okay. Well, a doula, personally for me, is a labor companion for the mother and for the family as well, but mainly for the mother. So she's an advocate for the mother during her pregnancy, just being able to educate the mother, comfort, spirituality. So it depends on exactly what the mother is looking for. There's several different doulas that have special skill sets, and mothers may want to connect spiritually in a different way or certain culture aspects. So that's just a part of being a companion for the mother during the process.
Thank you for explaining that. So that gives us a base, everybody, for people who don't know what a doula is. Now, the way that Brandy got on this show is we were talking about the issues with black women dying given during childbirth. And as in many of our conversations, we're, you know, going on and sharing information back and forth. And Brandy made the comment that we need to protest the doctors because this is just as bad as black women and black men getting killed by police officers. And then not just the doctors, because it isn't just them, it's the whole system, the way that it's done. And you, Brandy, can you just share some examples of what has happened with black women dying in childbirth and how that is completely unnecessary? You know, some people may be thinking that, well, sometimes women do die in childbirth. It's a, you know, it's a high risk situation, for lack of a better word, that's going on when people, when women are giving birth. But what is it in particular that could have been prevented, or that's alarming at the rate that you compare it to black people dying at the hands of police, etc.?
Well, and the stigmatism behind pregnancy being high risk in general, or that a woman needs to be concerned about making it out on the other side when she is pregnant. This is something that we've been doing since the beginning of time. This is nothing new for our ancestors. This is nothing new for our body. So even that alone, just that theory, you're planting this in people's minds, you're planting this in the mother's mind that, okay, there's all automatically a risk of something that we're naturally capable to do without any interference.
So it's not a, so help giving birth isn't a high risk?
It's not a high risk. Now you can, yes, can things occur? Can things happen? Yes, but this is a natural thing. We're built for this. We're born for this if you choose to bring life into this world. So the fact that there's this stigmatism around it being a risk is just untrue. And there's a lack of education for it. And there's the racism towards it, and there's the sexism towards it as well, because it's a male-dominated field. And to speak, I don't want to get off of even explaining why the urgency of it. Like one of the recent mothers who died during an emergency C-section, Sha'Asia, I hope I'm pronouncing her name correctly, recently she died during an emergency C-section, and Amber Isaac died during an emergency C-section. So you have a lot of several women that have died during childbirth of things that have been prevented. 65% of the maternal rates for women, black, and especially black women dying, are preventable. And in Kansas City, 80% of black mothers dying during childbirth, they determined that it was preventable.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's so really, saying, wow.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, I didn't realize that it was that high. Even in our conversations, I didn't realize the percentage was that high of preventable deaths.
Right. And that's why it's alarming. And when you give the number out and say, okay, in recent statistics, that is 700 women dying a year during birth. So, granted, when you want to look on the scale of things, that's not a large number. But when you break it down to most of these deaths could have been prevented, that's the problem. And when you go into Black women, Black and brown women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die during childbirth. That's an even major issue. So you go, I mean, you even can go into the history of when they started taking birthing out of the home, taking birthing from like our Black granny midwife during 1619 that arrived in America. And we, through just our ancestral wisdom, through culture, through tradition, through our knowledge of prenatal care, we basically birthed the generation. You know, we were the caretakers. We were the midwives. We were the companions during birth. We were delivering the babies. And around like late 1800s, that's when it shifted from having the midwives, having the granny midwives, into it going into the medical institution and the medical field. And the numbers of like the rates of some of the babies who were dying or mothers who were dying, they started to shift that and place like they do, rewrite history and blame the midwives or blame, you know, the doulas, which is a latter term that they use, but start to misblame that on the midwives and doulas as to a reason why they were shifting it from women basically being in the field of assisting women giving birth. Like, what better companion would you want? You know, another woman right. who understands that, another woman who has a uterus, has her body parts, has been through birthing their own children. And if not, there's still that connection and that still that understanding. So you take that away from women, and you take that away from women who this is in their blood, this is in our bones, this is in our generation. You take that away and you bring that into a male-dominated field. And
So Brandy, it became illegal to be a midwife?
And certain legislations, yes, like there were certain things to where they would pose a threat around it. So in recent years, it's become more, I guess, popular, for lack of a better word, to have a midwife, or certain states. I mean, there's still certain issues with state to state on whether you can have a midwife or whether a midwife, depending on what certification you have, like a certified nurse/midwife, you can have, but in certain states, if you don't have a certification, you cannot have a midwife.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. You talked a bit about, and I know we've had just gone back and forth about this topic in general in our discussions, but you talked a bit about just the history of childbirth and naturally us doing that in the homes, and so then outside of the parameters of a hospital and all that comes along with giving birth in a hospital. Can you compare and contrast that for us, for people who are millennials, for people who have no clue about the history of, especially for us as African people, the way we used to give childbirth in our history and the way that it's done in hospitals?
And so, and it's not to take away that all doctors or all hospitals have this practice to where it's negligence and things like where it's negligence or there's a lack of education around birthing, and especially with Black women and just our history. But the difference is when you think about home, there's a comfort, there's a familiarity there, there's family there. You can have your family around. You know, when you are in the hospital, sometimes you're only, and especially with the state of the world now and with COVID-19, a lot of women were giving birth and their spouses or significant others weren't allowed in the room.
Which so I think is crazy. I was just saying that's just crazy. If I'm giving birth, my husband need to be right in that room with me. I don't know that law. Whoever agreed to that, but go ahead.
You know, they did with like I know New Jersey and other states have relaxed on that and allowed your significant other to be in. Now sometimes if you have a doula, even outside of COVID-19, some doctors, some medical staff really did not prefer that you bring your doula in because the doula is the advocate for the mother. The doula is going to know, and that's a part of the thing with having a doula. You and the mother, you map out the birthing experience for her, how she wants things, what she wants, the consent that she wants to, give, whether you don't want any separation from your baby at all. You know, I know my sister, when she had given birth, she made sure that her children never left her sight. And when they did go to do the checkups and test them, she said, "My husband is going with you." And there was no question about that. So there was always, whether she had her eyes on them, there was a loved one there. There's an ambulance. It's the East Coast.
Oh, you okay? You all right?
We were talking.
Comparing
versus home versus in the hospital.
Yes.
So, at home, I mean, you are more in your environment, and if you have a midwife there, it's just that comfort, it's that ease, and it's that you are in control and you are in partnership with the midwife. And that's how it should be when you're in the hospital. It should be a partnership. It shouldn't be a dictatorship to where they're rushing you or there's quotas to make or there's all of these things that women are not even considering in their mind that's actually taking place in the medical field. So when you go in, I mean, just think about when you go to the hospital in general, it doesn't look inviting. It's not, really nothing about it that is inviting. It's cold, it's sterile, and you're laying on your back with your legs spread wide open. You know, nurses, doctors are coming in and out, pulling, checking, doing all of these things.
And the abusive lighting.
Yes, it's artificial lighting, which... it's not really good. You know, when a baby comes out of the womb, he or she has been in that protective womb. And then you come out and there's this harsh, bright lighting also as well on the mother. So there's just a lot of things that can play on the psyche that you're not even thinking about or aware of, or just the layout of how it is that you're not even aware of. And then it depends on, who knows if the doctor had a bad day? Who knows if the nurses had a bad day? So for a lot of things, when the doula, you come in there and you want to change the temperature of the room. You want to make sure we're all here for the mother. We're all here for the baby to arrive safely. We're not here to try to force any, you know, unnecessary interventions with the mother. You know, you're there. It's like the first priority should be for the mother and the child. And it's highly questionable.
No, I wanted to make sure you were done. I want to make sure you completed your thought.
Yes.
I was talking earlier today about the show, and again, I usually give my disclaimer about things that I really don't know too much about, especially in regards to experience. So I don't have any kids, not yet. Mm-hmm. I hope, but. I was discussing the show earlier, and we were talking about some of the systemic racism that happens in healthcare, and it reminds me, listening to you, it just reminded me of this book that I've been reading. I'm actually in it twice. It's called White Fragility. It's written by this young lady by the name of Robin DiAngelo. And the way she explains it, because she's a Robin. Did I say Robert again? I'm sorry. I meant Robin. Robin DiAngelo. The way she explains it in the book, when she discusses, because she's white, she talks about her birth, and she explains that when she walks into the hospital and she sees the hospital, she can understand, and even examining the place where she was born and looking at how the amount of white nurses and doctors, and seeing that everybody in an authoritative position or in a position to help the mother was predominantly white, and then the majority of the people who were the janitorial staff and like cleaning and changing the sheets were black. She said that she was able to ascertain by just that view that she was going to survive her and her mother would survive the birth. And I thought that was deep. Saying that, you know, that right there, seeing that the nursing staff and that the doctors are predominantly white, and that would ensure that she will survive her birth. And then it took me back to this. I was watching this or listening to this NPR. They did a special on this topic a while ago. And there was a black guy who had lost, I know for sure he lost his wife, and I want to say he lost his child. And the reason why is because he was more afraid of being the angry black guy and addressing the doctor, because the doctor wasn't believing his wife when she would say, I'm in pain. And that's what I found out when I was doing some research for a young lady who needed some help or to address the systemic racism at her job, which is a local hospital here. And one of the things I found is the disparity when it comes to, I really didn't understand it or know this, the disparity when it comes to death and childbirth. And my stance is, like you said, Ebony, you're going to get the angry black guy off rip. Like, especially in regards to the life of my wife, my spouse, and the child, like, yeah, that's when I'm going to have to let the doctor know, like, if anything happens to them, something's going to happen to you. So, you know, I mean that with all sincerity, you know,
Of course.
And I have no problem telling that to somebody with all sincerity, and absolutely be ready to put actions behind those words.
Brandy, mm-hmm. is it? Okay, for some people who may be listening, and they may think, okay, well, especially now, you know, we're in a situation where all of our lives have been rearranged and moved, and we're thinking, we're living very differently. How, if I'm listening to this show and I'm saying, okay, oh, well, maybe I want to look into having a doula, or maybe I want to look into having a midwife, but can I afford that? Will my insurance cover that? How reasonable is that for me to do, even if I feel that that is the best route for me to take?
Right. Well, when you look in today's age, honestly, having a midwife and giving birth in the hospital, they're fairly around the same amount that you would come, and it depends on your health insurance, and that is one of the disheartening things is that having a doula is not necessarily covered, or it depends on your health insurance, it depends on the state on whether that will be covered for a midwife as well, but a lot of times the amount is the same as far as if you have a midwife or you give birth in the hospital, and there are a lot of doulas. I mean, we are in service to our community, we are in service to mothers and the family. So for those who cannot afford to have a doula, that doesn't mean that you can't get one. You know, I think it's just your education, your resources, looking into it. Mama Glow, who I have studied under Latham Thomas, who is just amazing. That is an excellent recommendation to follow. It's like all things wellness, all things birth related, that's an amazing place to just look into and see about getting a doula and just letting them know your situation and just researching the where you live. Researching that. I know Kansas City, they do have birthing centers. They do have doulas, have midwives there. I don't live there, so I can't give like any personal recommendations, not living there anymore, but just definitely looking into it and looking into if you cannot afford a regular rate, just to see what you can afford or what you can do. And then even if not, your family, you know, this was something, honestly, when you think about the granny midwives and the doulas, this was family in our generation, in our ancestry. It wasn't, we live together. We live by each other. Now we live far apart. We live away from our families. We live away from our friends. So we're more dependent on the medical system. You know, we're more dependent on outside sources, but back in our time, we lived together. So you had your grandmother, you had your mother, you had your sisters, you had your women that lived near you. We were a village. So we had that support. And today, it's a lot of things have changed, and it's kind of finding our way back into that, or finding the new way to do that, because we need the support. We need the support of men, and we need the support of women, you know, because the men were supportive as well. It's like, you may not can speak to, you know, what it feels like to have contractions or different things of the baby, but you are there in support of your loved one. You're there in support of your child. So we were a village, and we had that. And if you can't afford a doula or can't afford to have a midwife, at least having someone there with you, family related or friend related, that could be there with you during your pregnancy and during the birthing.
Thank you, Brandy. We're going to take our first station break here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor A.J. Lowe. And if you've just joined us, we're talking with doula Brandy M. Johnson about protesting the healthcare system and Black women dying in childbirth. You can give us a call to join in the conversation if you have any questions or comments. The number is 816-931-5534. Again, the number is 816-931-5534, and we'll be back after this message. All right, we're back here on 90.1 FM. We do have a caller, Brandy. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, yes, my name is Sandra Thornhill. I am here in Kansas City, Missouri, and I was calling. I heard the conversation about wondering about resources here in Kansas City, Missouri for doulas and to be connected with a sisterhood or a village. I'm actually a mama, a volunteer, and an outreach staff member for a place called Uzazi Village. Uzazi Village is located right in the city on Truth. Let me look up our address really fast. But we do train sister doulas, and we just started a brother doula program. The sister doula program is for training Black doulas who are available for the community to serve our community. Our doulas charge on a sliding scale.
Don't give any prices, ma'am. We can't actually give prices over here, but thank you so much for sharing.
Uzazi Village, because it's beyond doulas. It's a great, safe Black space, a community, and a whole bunch of Black love.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Amazing. Thank you.
All right, and we did have another caller that was calling. Caller, our line is clear now. You can call back 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Professor Lowe, you had a question?
Yeah. Ms. Johnson, I want to ask you a question. When we were talking about getting away from doulas and midwives, my question was, do you think that integration has something to do with us getting away from doulas and midwives and being able to give birth in the home? Like, did we put more emphasis on the American healthcare system after integration or during integration?
I don't believe that integration... Yes and no, though. I think let me get my thoughts together. It's honestly just in the period of during slavery and kind of coming out of that, the medical institution was already being interjected into that. So I believe that it, regardless whether it was us integrating with each other, that was still going to be something that they were trying to present. Because, like I said, it's the same thing as what we're dealing with, the police brutality. It doesn't matter where you live. It doesn't matter. You know, you can be in an all-Black neighborhood, and you could be killed by the police. You could just, so I don't, sorry, I'm trying to get my thoughts together, but I don't think that integration just has a lot to do with why we're not Sorry, you're okay.
If that's no, we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. Please state your name, where you're calling from, and go ahead with your question or comment.
Freddie Malone, I'm here in Kansas City, and I called in last week, and the gentleman gave me he said the Green Lawn Initiative that they were having about people buying homes down in the north area. And back in the black area, and I found out that it's the Green Lion Initiative.
Okay, thank you.
Do you, sir? Find the number,
sir. Do you have a
back to the point? I wanted to ask you a question about this as well. They have a thing. One I've heard on the on the television that the lawyers were saying something about if your child has some type of problem at birth, and I think it's cerebral palsy that is. It was due to the doctors not doing something properly at birth, the reason why the child had that or may have that. And I was just wondering, with this situation like it is, could that be a part of the thing as far as the children dying when the ladies are having a childbirth, and that affecting a lot of black kids as well?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Yes, when you do an emergency C-section, it is higher risk, and it's higher risk for the mother. It's higher risk for the baby. So sometimes babies will have,
cerebral palsy. Yes, cerebral.
There are certain defects that the baby will have, especially with a lot of like the recent deaths with, Amber Isaac, Shia Isaiah Washington, they were emergency C-section. And when you listen to Serena Williams and Beyonce, and that's why when they talk about, because you'll see like a lot of articles, a lot of statistics, and they will say, well, due to poor education, low income, no health care, or Medicaid, that could cause, like, let's say the mother is dealing with high blood pressure or you're not getting your regular checkups. Well, you can say that on one hand, but when you have someone who's Serena and Beyonce, you know, money or insurance isn't an issue. And Beyonce suffered from preeclampsia during her set of twins that she gave birth to. So this is something that it's like, you can try to use lack of education. You can try to use low-income families that are diabetes, obesity, that they relate to black women having a lot of high-risk pregnancies. But, again, these deaths are preventable. And if you are listening and if you're not being negligent, when we're coming to our OBGYNs, when we're in the hospital letting our doctors know we have pain, we have headaches, we're swelling in the feet, swelling in the hands, these signs that something is wrong here, and listening to the spouses who are in that are fighting for their significant other's lives, it's like it's negligence at the end of the day.
You said Beyonce suffered from what? And what?
Preeclampsia. High blood pressure. And that could start in the second to third trimester. And as this is going unnoticed, it only increases during your pregnancy. So by the time you're giving birth, you already have high blood pressure. You already have a lot of these signs that are going on, which can create heart failure, which could create hemorrhaging. So then, if all of these things are occurring for the doctor, they're going to recommend an emergency C-section. And once you cut the woman open, you can also bring in infections, bring in from the placenta, eruption of the placenta. So there's so many dangerous things that could go on when our voices and our bodies are not being heard, listened to, and checked. Things that can be prevented and that should be prevented. But you also, for me, it's a problem because it's one thing where we have the horrific video footage where you can see that they're killing our brothers and sisters, you know, kneeling on George Floyd's neck. You can see that, but when you go to the hospital and you just check off, the woman died because, the mother died because of diabetes. She died because of heart failure. But you're not checking off your negligence of it. There's for Cura for Moms, there's an organization that can look into Charles Johnson, his wife, Kira Johnson. She had a scheduled C-section. So she had a scheduled C-section. And after the C-section, she started noticing that she was kind of fatigued, going in and out. So they knew that something was going on. And she was bleeding internally for 10 hours. And he was pleading with the nurses, with the doctors, that she needed help. And one of the nurses that he finally got a hold of, he said, listen, my wife needs help. You can see blood through the tubes. And she said his wife wasn't a priority. And after 10 hours, when the doctor finally went to check on her, once they opened the incision where the C-section was, I think under 15 minutes, she died. And she had like 10 liters of blood in her abdomen. So once you open the mother up and there's already that infection or there's the there's internal bleeding there, it's just speechless. Wow. It's tough to wrap your mind around it. It's tough to even, because there is no reason for it. There is no reason for it. It's like, yes, I know when we spoke earlier and it's like, well, have mothers or children passed away during childbirth? Yes, but when it is preventable, which is the case, that's when we're going into, this is just another form of systematic racism. This is just another form of attack on the black body. It's to where I'm trying to take the family structure out any way possible, whether that's through the police, which these are government institutions. That's what makes it, these are to protect and serve. This is when you go to the hospital, you're expecting for that person to be educated to where whatever problem that I'm having, like whatever issue that I'm having during birth with my child, you expect to live, you expect to survive, or you expect for the doctors and the staff to do everything that they can. And when you know that they're not, that's how we say.
Mm-hmm. I want to let people just remind people that you can call in if you've just joined us. This is Ebony's Bones. I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, and we're alongside our co-host, Professor AJ Lowe. We're talking with doula Brandy Johnson about protesting the healthcare system and black women dying in childbirth. You can join in with a question or comment at 816-931-5534. Again, that number is 816-931-5534. Professor Lowe, you had a question or comment?
No, I was just, I had a question. I had to cool off a little bit because this topic, I didn't think it was going to get to me like this. It's kind of getting to me. I have a juvenile question and then I have an adult question. Juvenile question is, I don't know anything about childbirth. What is the second and third trimester? Like, when is it?
It's the different stages of birth. So you have like 1 to 12 weeks, which would be the first trimester, and then the 12 weeks from 12 to, I forget the number of weeks, sorry. But it's just it's the different stages of a woman's pregnancy.
Okay.
Which is what trimesters are.
So as a guy, like some, I aspire to have children one day. What can I do? Like I said, I fight racism on all fronts, in all fronts, all forms. What can I do to make sure that I prevent this situation from happening to me in the future? Because I can't imagine, I can't imagine somebody telling me that my wife isn't a priority. Like,
right. Educating yourself, just, and that's education for the mother as well. To be honest, it's something that you see. It's something that you know you come from. You know, we all have a mother. We all have a grandmother. So it's something that we're so used to, but until I start thinking about when I have a child, and I wanted to be as informed and educated about my body and just about my options as much as possible. So it's understanding that you do have options, understanding that you do have a voice, that your spouse has a voice, and understanding, and like I said, mapping out the pregnancy. If you're not going to have a doula, I always recommend just having the support. That's just in life in general. You need that support. But especially during a pregnancy, a mother needs all the support that she can get and all of the understanding and listening ears that she can have. So it's educating yourself, giving support, having family, having people that are supportive, mapping out the pregnancy with your spouse as well, and going around and just understanding, getting the statistics from the hospitals. There is a petition on change.org that is requesting that hospitals release their data on pregnancy-related statistics. So it's like if you have a high rate of maternal mortality death, especially among Black and Brown women. So there's a lot of, it's not a new fight. There's organizations that have been fighting this. There's, like I said, for Care for Moms. So it's just getting their support groups on Facebook. And like I said, I would recommend, if I can say recommend on the radio.
Yeah, you recommend, can say
recommend. Mama Glow, because you do have a support group. And I'm sure, like the woman called in earlier, the male doula, you may not want to be a male doula, but I'm sure that there are some father supportive groups that are out there, you know.
Brandy, I want to talk about the snapback culture that, you know, had been very popular in America. You know, a woman gives birth and then she's back down to whatever size and her stomach's back flat and exercising and, you know, and all this sort of thing. Can you speak to, as you're talking about understanding our bodies and the birthing process and, you know, from before you're, you know, in the beginning stages of pregnancy, during it, and then after the fact, because you've shared just some information with me about ways that we've operated as Americans that's ludicrous for women giving birth, and that goes actually against the natural flow and health of our bodies.
It's a modern time of this obsession with the way we look, this obsession with, like you said, snapping back, this shame around such a beautiful experience. It's like, look what my body just did. Look what my body is coming back from. And your body may never be the same, but that's a part of the journey. And I think we're getting away some, just getting away from this spiritual, this sacred experience of giving birth, when just from training and just the magicalness when of going through that, how the child is developed in the womb, how your body changes and shifts and what your body is capable of doing, there's no reverence for that. There's no beauty in it sometimes. And just to sit with that and be with that, as opposed to trying to jump up and run back to work and run and do this, especially for women who sometimes haven't had the choice, have wanted to stay home, wanted to be able to bond further with the child and have had to go back to work. It's just like this culture of I'm every woman and I just gave birth and then I'm dropping down to 20 pounds and, you know, look at me, as opposed to just sitting in awe of what you just did, sitting in awe of what you and your baby just did, sitting in awe of what you and your spouse just gave birth to, or if you are a single mother, just you and hopefully you have your women around you, that we are respecting that, respecting the tradition of that. You have certain countries and older traditions that had a 40-day tradition of just loving on the mother, loving on the child, because it was so sacred, and sometimes we're getting away from that. And it's sad, because that's a connection that is being cut off from the baby and the mother. That's a connection that could be cut off from the family. You know, the baby is heavily dependent on that protection and its brain wiring of feeling, smelling, hearing the mother, hearing the voices that they've been around in this womb, you know, of this protective womb for 9 months. So it's to be not so much focused on what's healthy for you and what's healthy for the baby, as opposed to this new culture of what things look like and what I need to look like.
Yeah, we're going to take our last station break here on Ebony's Bones. We are talking with, I'm your host, Ebony Johnson, alongside our co-host, Professor AJ Lowe. And we're talking with Brandi Johnson, who is a doula calling in from the East Coast and joining in on the topic of protesting the healthcare system and Black women dying in childbirth. We'll be back to wrap up the conversation after these messages. All right, and we're back. If you want to join in the conversation, you can give us a call at 816-931-5534. Again, that number is 816-931-5534.
I have a question. Again, I'm ignorant to this whole process.
It's okay. I'm still learning myself. I mean, it's still a learning process for me. It's the knowledge is endless with just birthing and mothers.
Not only do I not have any kids, but I'm also a guy, so I feel like super ignorant to this. So I didn't know that there was a such thing as a snapback culture. When I hear snapback, I usually think of a hat. I know, seriously. But what would be the recovery, the average or the normal recovery process after having a child?
It depends. I mean, if you did have a C-section, you could recover up to a year. For a vaginal birth, it could be a couple of months. You know, you're, like I said, your body, they never be the same. But and that's also a lack of women in this medical field, to where you have certain women. Just when I was training, we had teachers that dealt with the pelvic alchemy. So it's like the realignment of the mother after she's given birth. When I talk to my sister, and you could talk to other mothers, it's like, you know, you're sent home, and then it's like, okay, that's it. You know, and there's a natural instinct and a mother instinct, but just even for the mother, just understanding why there are certain women that honestly, it's tough for them to have sex after pregnancy. It's tough even through breastfeeding, and there's not this support. There's not education around. There's so many women out here, lactation consultants. There's women, like I said, that deal with just pelvic recovery from giving birth. So it's educating yourself at the end of the day and just seeking out your resources. Because honestly, once you start, the ball just starts rolling, and then you get introduced to other people in these specific fields that are dedicated and have been doing this for decades to get the woman back to ultimate health, and just the realigning of her body, because your organs are shifted. Your body is completely shifted. So that's when you're jumping back into the snapback and jumping back into trying to, you know, be back out into the world, you don't understand what you're doing with your body, and you may not even know. There's a lot of things, you know, that we just are not aware of what's going on with us, and you may not even relate that to pregnancy. There's and a lot of issues, too, with just even some of the numbers of how many women are actually dying during childbirth and how many Black and brown women are actually dying during childbirth, because in some of the new statistics, women under 44 aren't counted. And women that are dying, yes, and women that are dying during postpartum depression, they are not being counted, because they're only really accounting for women around a certain age and women that are between like 42 weeks. So for women that have died during postpartum depression, that's not even in the conversation. And women after 44, that's not even in the conversation.
Well,
Wait, so how serious is postpartum depression? Because I hear about that. Again, I'm ignorant to this whole situation, so I'm really, really learning. But how serious is that?
It's very serious. And sorry, I don't. Can you hear the ambulance? I don't want to keep talking.
No, you're okay. Keep going.
Okay. It's most women go through postpartum depression. Like, even whether they're aware of it or not, it's your emotions. Like I said, your body has shifted. You're getting adjusted to the baby. You're getting adjusted to this a new world that you're in. So it changes you. It changes your emotions. And when you do, and there's postpartum doulas as well that are strictly postpartum doulas. You can have doulas that are doulas through your pregnancy and doulas do postpartum depression. But it is very serious, and I think sometimes I've heard men not understand it, because sometimes the woman can't even explain it. You're living and going through this, but you can't even explain it. You know what's going on, and just understanding mentally, emotionally, physically what you just went through, how that's changed your body, and how, I mean, everything is connected. So, of course, things are going to seem out of whack. Of course, your emotions are going to be up and down. Of course, you're going to have these bouts of depression. And that's, it's just taking the labor experience, the birthing journey. That's a part of the birthing journey. And I would, you know, recommend any woman, like I said, whether you have a doula or just being around your support group during that time.
So,
for postpartum depression, and educating your significant other, if you are with your spouse or your significant other,
which is what my question would be, right to that right there, that issue right there, postpartum depression. What can the guy do? What can the spouse or the husband or the, for lack of a better term, the baby daddy?
Mm-hmm. Just be supportive, listen, and seek out help. Like, let's say if the mother is just in a state to where she can't, which honestly, that's what you want to be for her. You don't want her trying to figure out how to get help and figure out all of these things. That's what we're here for. You know, we're so separate in a lot of ways. We're so single-minded and on a different agenda and just not even being educated about each other. And that experience, it's like there is so much information and education and so many women and men that have the tools and the resources to help partners during this journey and help mothers during this journey, that no one should feel alone. No one should feel that they are suffering through postpartum depression by themselves. And even women who have spouses, they could still feel that way. And at times, if they do, sometimes that is just to allow that and not try to fix it or change it, but just be the space and be the support for her. And then educate yourself. Educate yourself about the signs and what she's going through, and educate yourself about postpartum depression. And if you need to hire a doula, a postpartum doula, or just have who she would like to be around and be in support of her through that.
Okay, I got one more question. All right, is there like a time period between children that a woman should be able to take off? Like for example, I know a young lady who was suffering from postpartum depression, and she had three kids literally back to back to back within a year, almost a year of each other. So, and then by the third time, she was experiencing the depression so bad that she was contemplating doing things that she was, and I'm not going to say what she told me, but it was absolutely out of nature for her, especially being the mother that she is. So is there a time period that should be taken between giving birth?
No, there's not. I mean, because that's something, especially if she just happened to give birth, through that time, there's no time period to say, okay, I've had a child, now let me wait another year or wait a couple of months. Now, there is, you do, in postpartum depression, you do, if there are certain signs that you do need to sustain from having sex, which even after the baby. So, and that instance, there are certain times during pregnancy and during postpartum depression that you would need to sustain from that. So I don't know if that's something I can speak to exactly what her process was, but I don't think her dealing with, let's say that it being even worse during her third child of postpartum depression, that would be an issue. It could just be something that, honestly, she hasn't had support or help from, or even know how to speak to that. And that's one thing, again, with having a doula or having support, some things you just don't know what to speak to. Some things you don't even know how to understand to articulate yourself. But you have trained women, you have trained professionals who see those signs, who understand that, who are already on top of it before you get there. And already mapping out that plan. So,
Brandy,
again, go ahead.
You said, I want to get this in before we close here because we just have a few minutes left, but I've heard you speak about the practice of early separation where we've come into putting our children in strollers and, you know, as soon, you know, the doctors take the baby away, let the mother or father hold them, quit briefly, and then they whisk them away, you know, to go do tests or clean them off or do whatever. And you've talked about the need to really be there with the child and not practice so much early separation, even in the sense of using a stroller a lot. Can you speak to those practices?
Mm-hmm. And again, it comes from sometimes the interference of pregnancy, the interference of motherhood from men who are dominating this field or shaming mothers. You know, there are certain mothers who have been shamed for, put that baby down, or you got to let that baby cry. It's a baby, you know? When you just think about that simple logic, this is a baby, so if he's crying out, he or she is talking to me. That's their language. So this separation, or to kind of train many independent babies, it's just like we got to understand where that's colonized in our mind, and you're already setting up a separation from parent and child, to where when you get, and for me, there's such a deep psyche involved into it that you start the early stages of this. So to when you're taking parents away, when you're killing our mothers, our fathers in the streets, you are already from birth kind of setting up this separation of that. There's things, even when you go to pharmaceuticals, the baby formula, everything, they thought of everything. And that's what I feel like we don't even understand the depth that they go through in the separation of separating your baby. And because for me, I want my eyes on my child at all times. And if I'm asleep, then my husband or my family, they are holding our baby because it's a village. So there is no reason that you need to be separated from your child. And like I said, this child has been in your womb. That's the safest place to be. The mother is the safest place to be, the safest place to sleep, the safest place to nurse. So this thing of separating a baby from their mother is, like I said, it's colonized. It's intervention. It's intervening between pregnancy, and it's intervening between motherhood, to where you're already wiring in that baby's mind a lack of protection. When that baby can smell, sense, and hear, they know they're protected. They know that's the mother. Like, it's so much to get into, and it's so much of when when you have your child and just what you are cultivating, what you're cultivating in that baby, that is unimaginable, that we're not even aware of, that not all, but that a lot of us are just not even aware of what it does to that child mentally, emotionally, the maturity that it gives to that child mentally, emotionally, the communication that it starts to build for that child.
Brandy, we have literally about 1 minute left here, and I want to give you an opportunity to share or say anything, share and or say anything on this subject that you would like our audience to know that you haven't said already, or repeat something that's necessary for us on this topic of protesting the healthcare system and Black women dying in childbirth.
Mm-hmm. I would like to say that we have a voice. Like I said, the fight is not new. There's For Cure for Moms. There's Mama Glow. There's BothBirthJustice.org. And on Change.org to sign the petition. So it's passing the legislation. It's holding the medical institution, the doctors, the medical staff, the nurses, holding them accountable. And it's also us having our own. Having Black and brown people in the medical field, our doctors, our nurses, our medical institutions, you know, so to where we have our safe place, and it's educating ourselves. Whether you want a midwife or not, it's education. You have the right to ask questions. You have the right to pre-interview, you know, your OBGYN, your doctors. Like, you have the right. And to not allow the fear, not allow the God complex that could come with some of the medical institutions with some of the doctors. Because who but you that would know your body, that would know your baby and know what you're going through better than the person who has lived in that body their entire life? So trust your voice for that.
Thank you so much. We've been talking the whole hour with doula Brandy Johnson, calling in from the East Coast about protesting the healthcare system and Black women dying in childbirth. For anyone listening, you can always listen back to this show. If you visit kkfi.org and search for Ebony's Bones, you will be able to find the podcast for this show. Thank you so much, Brandy. We appreciate you for sharing the information.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And stay tuned for American Roots with Nick Spencer.